Hello, my name's Tom Boom.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, Tom will feedback on exactly what caused the loss of windows in an Airbus A321neo last month, while I see why the UK no longer has any Boeing 767 operators.
I'll share news of a massive $10 billion aircraft order, while Joe looks at the political storm brewing over slots in Amsterdam.
Finally, Tom will see what there is to look forward to at next week's Dubai Air Show.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And I really wanted to start by talking about this A321 window drama, because I saw the report from the AAIB last Friday, I think, and I just found it so fascinating. It was like one of these things that I just saw it and I was like, I need to write about this, which doesn't happen every day, you know. So what exactly happened? Well, maybe 3-4 weeks ago now, we heard of an A321neo. It was actually the one that was used by the UK government for a little bit, and it's owned by Titan Airways. And we heard that it had returned to Stansted. And it was a bit unclear exactly what had happened, but it seemed as though it had taken off from Stansted without some of the windows installed after some maintenance.
Mm.
Now, fast forward to last week, and the AAIB have sort of done the preliminary investigation onto what happened. And they were, I don't know, they were so concerned by what happened that they shared an interim bulletin, basically saying to everyone, this is what happened, so make sure you don't do this because this could happen again. So what exactly did happen? Well, the day before the aircraft was due to be flying, it was used for filming, which is not, you know, like, bizarre in itself. What was maybe perhaps a little bit different was that the people who were filming had incredibly high-powered lights aimed at four of the windows, and this was to simulate the effect of a sunrise. The problem is these lights are so high-powered that they were putting out so much heat as well. If you look at the data sheet for these aircraft, for the lights, they're called the Maxibrut 12. It says they should be placed at least 10 meters away from the object that's to be illuminated. Now, the AAIB report reveals that the closest of these was just 6.1 meters from the fuselage of the aircraft.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, exactly. So what effectively happened was that these lights were causing such heat on the fuselage of the aircraft that they actually melted some of the foam that holds the windows in place.
Oh, my goodness.
Thankfully, you know, you've got several layers of the windows. There's a sort of outside layer that's designed to break if, like, anything hits it or so before and then in the middle, I think you've got the sort of structurally integral window. And then on the inside, you've got the sort of plasticky bit that's designed to break if a passenger hits it or whatnot. So thankfully, it was only the outside windows or the outside part of the windows that was really affected. Four of the windows had damage, so two of the window assemblies were found to be completely missing the outer pane. The inner pane and the seal of a third window were found to be displaced, and a fourth window had started to protrude from the fuselage.
Dear.
What is interesting is that the AAIB says that there were no pressurization warnings in the cockpit of the cabin. So how did they notice that the windows had been fallen out, I guess would be the right word? Basically, the passengers thought it was a bit colder and louder in the fuselage than normal. But and when I say passengers, you know, they were kind of crew that weren't working, as opposed to you know, random people who've booked a holiday. But they noticed it was a bit louder and colder than usual. And then after the flight, after seatbelt signs went off, one of them went up to go to the galley at the back, and he noticed as he was walking down that it was getting louder. And he looked at the window, and you could see that something wasn't right. They weren't exactly sure what had happened again, because there were no pressurization warnings in in the cockpit, but you know, there was an engineer from the airline on board as well, and like the captains and the captain, the co-pilot and the engineer decided probably best to return to London Stansted. So they touched down 36 minutes after they departed, and the landing was attended by the fire and rescue service. Thankfully they weren't needed. They did find, I believe, a shattered window part on the runway after it landed when they did an inspection. So I think that was the third one was probably sort of
on its way.
Yeah, yeah. The bump of landing knocked it out. It's quite interesting though, because the AAIB did say that if they'd flown higher or for longer, there could have been much more drastic consequences. But the reason they wanted to push this report out is just so, you know, anyone else who's thinking of filming might hopefully think twice about this, so there's not a repeat.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it was very confusing when the report first came out because it said windows were loose or missing. And you think, my goodness, that must be like an extreme depressurization event. But I guess that external window that fell out is not the kind of pressurization part. It's just a kind of finishing trim. So thankfully, not as drastic as we first thought. But yeah, if you're using the maxi brute, put it at least 10 meters away from your aircraft is the lesson. In that one, I guess.
Probably even a bit further would be better to just be safe, but who knows?
Definitely, definitely. Well, there are lots of A321neos in the UK. Most of them do have windows, but one aircraft type there are no longer any more of, at least with UK operators, are the Boeing 767. So UK passenger airlines have no longer got any 767s because TUI retired the last of its 300 ERs on October 31st. Horrific, on Halloween as well. The retirement falls almost 40 years since the twin jet first arrived in the UK, and TUI's last two 767s were registered GOBYF and OBYK. Now, OBYF is a 25-year-old 767 that first flew back in May 1998. It has also been operated at Garuda Indonesia and Britannia Airways Germany before being used by Thomson, Thomson Fly, and then finally TUI. According to Flight Radar 24, YF's last commercial flight was on October the 31st when flight number Tomjet 2243 arrived in Manchester from Heraklion at just after midnight. Over its lifespan, that particular airframe has accumulated 94,000 flight hours across more than 20,000 flights. So the day after its retirement from TUI, it headed off to Istanbul's Sabiha Gökçen Airport, and it's going to be stored there awaiting conversion to a freighter. The other aircraft, OBYK, is slightly younger at 24 years old. Logically, first flew in March 99. It was originally delivered to Air 2000, remember them? And it operated for First Choice, for Aeroflot, and then finally for TUI. The aircraft's name was Sunshine, which was quite appropriate given its role to lots of sort of tourist sunshine destinations. It's got 102,000 flight hours, which is far more than its sister, but it's got fewer flights at just over 17,000. So that indicates it generally flew longer sectors. Flight Radar 24 shows that YK flew from Manchester to Palma on October 28th. And of course, it should have followed kind of the same trajectory. I can't say that word today. That's the same trajectory as OBYF and returned to Manchester. But it went tech when it was in Palma and it's been on the ground there since then. When it can, when it's repaired, it will fly to Sabiha Gökçen as well to join YF, also awaiting being turned into a freighter. Of course, there are still plenty of passenger 767s in the world. Air Astana, for example, one of Tom's favourites, has some of the youngest 767s in the world.
Delta's, you know my thoughts on them.
Yeah, I know. Delta's still got loads of them. United still has a few. But of course, American Airlines retired all of its 767s during the pandemic. And, you know, while the 767 is becoming less common as a passenger aircraft, as a freighter, it's something we'll see in the skies for many years to come. I found some interesting research from Flight Radar 24 when it was tracking the operation of 767. And in 2022, it tracked over 335,000 767 freighter flights out of 511,000 total shuttle flights. So, you know, it shows that actually it's in use more as a freighter these days than it is as a passenger aircraft. It's actually able to be turned into various types of freighters, including the Boeing manufactured kind of factory produced version, the BCF, which is the Boeing converted freighter, the PCF, which is precision converted freighter. And then one of the more popular ones is the BDSF, which is the Bedeck special freighter. Can't do my words today. Each type of freighter is slightly different and serves a different purpose for its operator. But it's interesting to see how the last few years have really affected the 767, because pre-pandemic, the 767 was in use almost equally between passenger and cargo. But of course, as travel restrictions hit, the 767 was parked en masse, and it's never really recovered from there. So passenger operations did rebound in 2022. There were about 168,000 recorded 767 passenger flights, which was still significantly more than 2020, but down about 40% from 2019. Other airlines that have retired it include WestJet, which completely removed the 767 in 2020. German Condor decreased 767 operations by 40%, and Austrian as well has used the type 43% less last year. Lufthansa Group has already said that the 767 is due to retire, and Austrian's going to be getting the Dreamliner as a replacement, which is very nice. FedEx is amongst the largest operator of the 767, of course, and is one of the few airlines that's still taking deliveries of brand newly built aircraft. In 2019, there were 57,000 FedEx flights with the 767, but in 2022, this grew by almost 70% to 96,000 flights. The type's also been a significant contributor to the success of one of the world's newest cargo carriers, which is Amazon's Prime Air. And of course, it lives on in military and government uses as well. Boeing's KC-46, which is utilised for aircraft refuelling and strategic military missions, continues to be built. But for passenger flying, the 767 is becoming more scarce. And for now, it's no longer in any operations with UK airlines. So bye-bye, 767. It was nice while it lasted.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's quite interesting what you mentioned about FedEx is still taking new ones, because you're so focused on passenger operations, you think, 767 is like old.
Yesterday's news, yeah.
It's surprising to hear that. But talking about new aircraft, I wanted to talk about some new Airbus aircraft that are due to go to another carrier. So what was quite exciting was that EVA Air this week revealed that it's looking to add new Airbus aircraft to its fleet. And this was announced. It was quite an interesting announcement because there wasn't really a press release from Airbus or EVA Air. There was a LinkedIn post from Airbus, basically, Twitter or whatever you want to call it now, post saying like, oh, we're really excited that EVA Air have made this order. And I was like, what?
And where's the press release?
So I looked on Airbus and EVA Air and I'm like, where is this? It turned out it was hidden away on the Taiwanese stock exchange. But yeah, it was. I think it took about 5-10 minutes to find that in the end. It was really well sort of buried. But it basically shows that Airbus is going to be providing wide and narrow body aircraft for the airline with 33 jets to be delivered. So what's happening? Basically, the airline is going to be taking 18 A350-1000s, that's the larger version of the 1000, alongside 15 A321neos from Airbus. And it's unclear what version of the 321neo has been ordered, but it seems unlikely it's going to be the LR or the XLR, as Airbus said the aircraft will be used for regional routes. What I did find really fascinating, though, was that, you know, we talk about how much does an aircraft cost a lot, and no one really knows because, you know, Boeing has its list prices. Airbus stopped doing list prices in 2018 because they were saying, you know, no one ever pays list prices because there's all sorts of negotiations and deals.
So what's the point in having the list? Yeah.
Well, what I found really interesting was that the stock exchange filing gave a maximum price for these aircraft. So if you look at the 2018 Airbus list prices, an Airbus A321neo would have set you back $129.5 million. The stock exchange listing said that these aircraft will not exceed $150 million. So that's about $20 million more. And the 350-1000 was listed at $366.5 million in 2018. Now, they are not to exceed 436 million. So when you do the maths, and I'm not going to make you do the maths now, because
please
thankfully the EVA Air already did it for us on the stock exchange. The total transaction price of this order is not to exceed $10.1 billion. So quite a bit of money changing hands there. I did also do a little quick dive into the EVA Air fleet to see sort of where these aircraft could fit in. You know, the airline's narrowbody fleet is only A321-200s. These aircraft are still relatively young at 8.5 years, so you wouldn't think of replacing them right away. The oldest is just 10 years old. But interestingly, I did some digging, and roughly a year ago, we reported that EVA Air was looking to cut its narrowbody fleet while eyeing a widebody order. So it's interesting that that's kind of changed from cutting the narrowbody fleet to buying new narrow bodies. I'm not sure, again, whether the plan is to replace them or add, you know, from the age of the aircraft, I would say they would want to expand the fleet. But from the fact that they were looking to retire the narrow bodies about a year ago, perhaps they are going to be swapping them out. But, you know, it's quite exciting. I really love the EVA Air livery on the CGI A350. I think it looks it looks really good on an A350 with the wingtips as well. So check that out on the website.
It does. I don't mind the EVA Air livery, but I do feel like it's due a refresh. I mean, they've been flying with the same thing for a while. I feel it looks a little dated, but still excited to see the A350-1000 with a new carrier, because it's one of the best out there at the moment for new technology planes, in my opinion. Anyway, so go on. What's your segue, Tom? I can see you're bursting to do it.
I was going to say, no, one of the best aircraft is the A380.
Oh, Tom's A380 podcast.
It's not time yet. Be patient.
So I wanted to move from talking about Asia to talking about, well, Europe and the US, really, because JetBlue's bold plan to expand premium low-cost transatlantic flights has run into something of a setback, because it has lost its slots at Schiphol Amsterdam Airport for summer 2024. So you'll remember that it launched its daily service to Amsterdam from New York on August 29th and then from Boston on September 20th. You know, it was one of the newest routes on the network and one of the latest destinations in Europe, and very exciting all round. However, the Dutch government has decided to limit the number of flight operations at Schiphol, principally to reduce noise and carbon emissions. And it's looking to bring in new regulations to reduce flights from 500,000 to 460,000 annually, starting in summer next year. The government wants to reduce flights at Schiphol by 452,000 starting in the winter next year. So there are further reductions on the table. But these plans are very unpopular with airlines, as you can imagine, with KLM and other European carriers already crying out about it. The scheme hasn't kicked in fully. It's still pending approval from the Dutch cabinet and the European Commission. But they've heard a bit more about how this plan is going to affect the airlines that fly into Schiphol. So as the plan proceeds into this first stage, 84 airlines with historic rights at Amsterdam have needed to reduce their portfolio by an average of 3.1%. That represents a total reduction of over 9,000 slots, 252 of which come from Delta Airlines. American Airlines will have 22 fewer slots at Amsterdam next summer, United Airlines 53, and actually KLM is losing almost 5,000, 4,847 to be precise, so quite a lot. But the airlines that don't have historic flight rights at Schiphol, which includes the new entrant JetBlue, will not be allocated any slots for summer 24, which is kind of drastic. In fact, across all airlines for America member carriers, they lost 339 historic slots, which prompted the organization to call for some intervention by the US Department of Transport, or DOT. And the US DOT did retaliate and has hit back at the Dutch government by ordering the Dutch carriers KLM, Martinair and TUI Fly to file schedules for all their services to and from the United States within 7 days for reconsideration. So what they're kind of saying, reading between the lines, is that, you know, because JetBlue is not going to be allowed to fly to Amsterdam, the DOT will start reconsidering some of its allocations for Dutch airlines to fly into the States.
I mean, we had the same thing with China during COVID, when China was saying we cutting the US flights, the US was like, okay, well, we'll do the same for you.
Yeah, we saw it in Nigeria as well, when Emirates was owed all that money by Nigeria, and they decided they'd stop flying to Nigeria until they paid. So Nigeria stopped Air Peace flying into Dubai as well. So the DOT has called the Dutch government's plan, I guess, an unlawful experimental regulation. It formally approves the complaints of the members of Airlines for America and JetBlue. And specifically in its complaint, the DOT said the department finds that because the Netherlands has failed to follow the balance approach, the phase one capacity reduction measures being undertaken at Amsterdam constitute unjustifiable and unreasonable activities under International Air Transportation Fair Competitive Practices Act and are in violation of the US-EU Air Transport Agreement. It further said it was deeply troubled by the notion that new entrants will be completely foreclosed from slot access at Amsterdam without any secondary or alternative means to obtain access. It slammed the Dutch government's implementation of its noise reduction plan at Schiphol as an unjustifiable and unreasonable discriminatory and anti-competitive practice. The DOT, the Dutch government and the European Commission are going to be consulting on this issue on November 13th. But if there is no meaningful progress, Washington warned it stood ready to impose further appropriate action. And it's not only the DOT that's unhappy, as Delta has also started legal proceedings. One of their spokespersons told CH Aviation that Delta is disappointed by the decision to reduce slots at Amsterdam Schiphol for IATA's summer 2024 season. This decision is in violation of the US-EU Open Skies Agreement and will negatively impact consumers. We believe it is possible to balance sustainability priorities with passengers' desire to travel and connect with people across the world, something we've demonstrated through a vigorous commitment to decarbonise our operations and reduce noise. So poor old KLM finds itself kind of in the crosshairs of its own government's plan and now also faces the possibility that various Open Skies partners will pursue sanctions against KLM. It's already leading an industry-wide campaign against the Dutch scheme, which is supported by IATA and other airlines in Europe. But I guess we'll wait and see how this one shakes out. At the moment, it's a bit of a political hot pot, I would say.
Yeah, it's one to watch. I mean, there's two sides to it, really. I think we're on the aviation side, and I see the point of cutting flights, but I feel like this drastic, you know, there's better...
No new entrants. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, what they should be doing is thinking about what those airlines are flying into Schiphol. Mm. You know, if they're flying in old 757s, 767s, you know, 737 NGs even, maybe less flights for old technology aircraft. Mm. But someone like JetBlue, who's flying the most efficient Airbus out there, you know, that is going to have a much lower noise footprint and environmental footprint than any of the wide bodies flying into Amsterdam. So, you know, to put it under an environmental legislation doesn't make sense. If you're just saying we want to reduce slots so no new people, that can't be couched as an environmental move because it doesn't account for what they're flying or what their carbon footprint is, really. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox and let you talk about Dubai.
Yeah, well, speaking of environmentally friendly aircraft, we should see a few of them next week. And I wanted to talk a bit about Dubai because it's happening finally. It's coming next week. I'm going to be out there with Summit, hopefully bringing all of the breaking news to you. Who knows what's going to happen? I think so far we've got some ideas of what might be happening, but maybe we get some curveballs that we're not expecting. Among what we know is going to be happening, I mean, firstly, the thing that excites me most about the air show right now is that Dubai Airports revealed that if you enter the country between November 6th and November 18th through Dubai International or Dubai World Central Airport, you're going to get a special passport stamp commemorating the air show. And I think this is just amazing. I can see, it depends though, if it's like the usual passport stamp just looks a bit different or an extra stamp, because I think people could get a little bit annoyed having an extra stamp in their passport because it takes up space, especially if you're short on space. But I mean, the kind of general move of the worldwide airport industry at the moment is getting redder stamps. You know, there's my passports coming into Dubai, I've got way more stamps entering than leaving, because they always push you to use these e-gates leaving that don't give you a stamp. You know, the EU's getting rid of its stamps with this new Etias thing and whatnot. But, you know, passport stamps is not really what we want to talk about in Dubai. So what do we want to talk about? Well, firstly, you know, there's going to be so many cool aircraft in the air show, and this is the part of the podcast where it's time for
Tom's A380 podcast.
So along with Emirates' A380, we're going to see a bunch of cool aircraft. Some of the highlights are Airbus is bringing an A321 passenger to freighter aircraft, and they're bringing the A321neo. At the moment, they're just saying the A321neo, but given everything that's going on, I would assume it's the XLR, because that was the one that they showcased in Paris, and that's like the cool current thing. You'll like this one. Air India Express is bringing their new 737 MAX 8. So we'll get some nice photos of that. Startup, all luxury startup Beyond is bringing the A319. Saudi is bringing the 320neo. There's another 320 passenger to freighter. Another cool one is the IAI and AerCap are going to be bringing the Big Twin. So that's another converted freighter.
Nice.
That's the 777-300 ERSF. As we're going on all of these acronyms today. Along with the A380, Emirates is also bringing the 777. Etihad's bringing the 787. Boeing is bringing a 787. And our favorite, the 777X, which I'll be able to go on again on Wednesday. At this point, you know, we've seen everything on the 777X. I think it's going to be my fourth or fifth time on it, but it's still so cool.
See if you can find something new.
Qatar Airways is coming. And this is interesting in a couple of ways, because firstly, it's their first air show since the restrictions on Qatar were lifted by the UAE, or these blockades were lifted early 2021. So they could have theoretically come to the last Dubai air show, but they didn't.
It was still early days for that relationship then, I feel. But now it's clearly nicer, friendly terms.
Yeah, well, they're going to be bringing an A350-1000 as well. So
nice.
Double nicer, friendly terms.
Shame it's not one of the ones with the paint damage, so we could get some photos of that.
That's gone now. Like Akbar Al-Bakr. So it'll be interesting to see if the new CEO is on show at the show.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's not doing any round tables or anything.
We'll see what happens. Saudi as well is bringing a 787. So lots of 787s this year. but, you know, airplanes are just hard. For it, orders are going to be another big thing. I think we're going to see quite a few orders this year. Last year alone, Airbus and Boeing together had 505 orders. Airbus had 404 and Boeing had 101. So only a quarter of what Airbus managed. But these orders, were all of the orders that were placed 2 years ago, were equivalent in value to $74 billion.
So, wow.
I say equivalent in because it goes back to the Eva Air story of, you know, no one ever pays
list
this.
Prices. Yeah.
But yeah, the one airline that I believe we will definitely see an order from is Riyadh Air, because, you know, they've been talking a lot about their, the narrow body order. They've been talking a lot about this. And a couple of weeks ago, I think it was at the Arabian travel market or finance market or something. Tony Douglas was being interviewed there, and he said the order is coming very, very soon. So I would be surprised if we don't sit in a room and hear that. The surprise will be whether it's sitting in a room with Stan Deal or the people from Airbus. it's going to be exciting, because they're also bringing their new their second livery along. So watch this space. And of course, you know, Sumit and I have lined up quite a lot of CEO interviews as well. So hopefully we'll get some exciting stuff from those.
I don't think Turkish is done yet. I think Turkish could pull another order out of the bag. I think they've kind of done half their order, and I think we might see more juice from them at the show, but that's just my little pick.
I mean, I hope to. It's not something that I'm like so sure about as as Riyadh. But you know, watch this space. You know, I'm not really watching Turkish so closely at the moment because I know that's one of Summit's favorites. So we'll see. But yeah, hopefully we'll have a lot of cool Dubai stories on next week's podcast. That'll probably be a Dubai Air Show special, I guess. So yeah, I could keep going on and on about the air show for probably another 10 minutes, but I think maybe I don't want to steal your line, Joe.
Let's wait and see how it all goes. It's exciting times. I'm very sad not to be going, but I'll be holding the fort here in the office and probably writing up all the stories that Tom and Sumit send me from the air show. But another thing that's happening next week, if you're not able to get to Dubai, do watch out for our latest future flying webinar, which will be taking place on Monday, 13th of November. We tried to pick a time that kind of spans the globe for people to tune in. So we're 5 p.m. GMT, 12 p.m. in New York and 9 a.m. Pacific time. So hopefully a time that will suit everybody wherever in the world you are. But of course, it's immediately playable back. I better tell you who it's with, otherwise you won't want to come. So we're going to be talking to a man called George Alafniov, who is the CEO of a company called Jekta. They're based in Switzerland and they're developing an electric regional seaplane. It's a very cool design and we've got some cool graphics of the plane that we're going to be including in the webinar. And he's going to be in Dubai as well. We talk quite a bit about what he's doing in Dubai. So do pop by his stand, Tom. I think they've got a VR tour of the interior of the plane and things like that going on. So that should be cool. But I think that's probably about all we've got time for on today's podcast. Can we just have some appreciation for Tom, who's battled through the podcast today with an absolutely stinking cold? Cheers, Tom.
Thank you.
As usual, we hope you enjoyed it and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.